The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. If you have any questions or would like to become a sponsor, please contact our office at 919-832-5138. Everyday Miracles, the Bible that beat a tornado. And there's a picture of a Bible opened with a photograph in it, and looks like a handkerchief or something of that nature in it. One minute, Peggy Lewis and her husband, Harris Lee, were watching the trees blow in the wind outside their home in Eureka, Kansas. The next, they were surrounded by swirling shards of glass from the house's broken windows. The roof tore off, the wires caved in, and the 152-mile-per-hour tornado had passed. It took a team of neighbors to pull the couple from the rubble and take them to the hospital. "I thought we were going to die," says Lewis, 58. When the pair returned to their property 3 days after that awful night in June, it was clear that the remainder of the house would need to be torn down. But before Lewis would let that happen, he wanted one thing, her family Bible. Lewis had brought the Bible 35 years early at the start of her marriage. Like many folks, she uses it to hold and preserve her family's history. Decades-old photos, newspapers, obituaries, and a loved one's. A handkerchief from her great-grandmother, a lock of her daughter's hair, even a piece of scarf her uncle had brought back from the Korean War. The Bible was the first thing Lewis looked for when she returned to the house. It wasn't where she'd last seen it, on top of an antique dresser in her bedroom. In fact, the dresser wasn't there at all. The only thing that was left was a solid slab of marble that had been on the top of the piece of furniture. When two volunteers showed up to help the couple dig out, Lewis had one mission for them. "If you can find anything," she said, "please find my Bible." After an hour of searching, one of the volunteers ran up to her. She had tears streaming down her cheeks and a book in her hands. The young woman had found the Bible while sifting through the rubble. It had thrown approximately 10 feet from the ill-fated dresser. Stunningly, while many books inside the home had been destroyed beyond recognition, the Bible was still intact, even though it had sat in the rain for days. "I completely broke down," she says, Lewis. "I thought it was gone forever. It was a miracle." A few of the Bible's treasures did go missing, but even so slowly, they too began reappearing in Lewis's life. Days after the Bible was found, volunteers discovered one of the newspaper obituaries outside the home. 2 weeks later, a neighbor found another newspaper clipping by her house. "It was such a shot," said Lewis. "Lewis and her family are living at a friend's house until they get back in their feet. But the Bible already has its well-deserved place of honor on Lewis's borrowed dresser. She knows that while every good book tells stories of catastrophe, weather, and unlikely survival, this one actually lived it." Food for thought. Extremely suspicious that there's no information about brains that didn't come from a brain? 50 health facts your doctor wants you to know. Cover story. 35 most trusted brands in health and wellness. And there's pictures of everything from Tylenol, NyQuil, ChapStick, Clorox, Benefil, Olay, Planters Peanuts, Centrum, Vitamins, Health Bars, Crest Toothpaste, Tums, Liquidso, Aviano, Benadryl, Chobani. We want to have faith in the products we buy. After all, no one wants to waste money. When a purchase involves our health, the expectation of quality is paramount. That's why this annual Reader's Digest Trusted Brand Survey focuses on 35 categories affecting our well-being, from medications and supplements to health devices and food, even what's best for our pets. Professional guidance is important, of course, but with their rich histories, these are the products consumers have come to trust the most. Tylenol, headache and pain reliever. Along with gravity and potato chips, Tylenol is one of history's great accidental discoveries. In 1886, a pair of German medical students were treating a patient's intestinal worms, when they mistakenly dosed her with a chemical cocktail that had body metabolized into acetaminophen. The patient's fever broke. Acetaminophen became property across Europe. And in 1955, the Philadelphia Running McNeil Laboratories, a pharmaceutical company, brought the drug to America as Tylenol Elixir for Children, a prescription-only antipyretic packaged with a tiny red fire truck and marketed for little hotheads. The marketing of the medicine worked. Today, Tylenol heals hotheads, large and little, in 13 countries. Dove, soap and body wash. It's the number one selling soap in the United States, thanks in large part to its most famous ingredient, moisturizing cream. Chobani, Greek yogurt. The name means shepherd, but not in Greek. Hamadi Ulkara, who founded the company, came to the United States from his native Turkey in 1994. Dr. Scholl's Foot Care. William Scholl, a Chicago shoe salesman turned medical doctor, created his first arch support in 1904, before he even graduated from medical school. ZZ Quil, sleep aid. Unlike some other over-the-counter sleep aids, ZZ Quil contains no pain relievers. Also, unlike other brands, it comes in dreamy-sounding flavors such as calming vanilla cherry and warming berry. Nature Made, fish oil. Scientists have yet to establish the effectiveness of many supplements, but fish oil has long been shown to help prevent heart disease. Lip care, chapstick. The Egyptians began using beeswax, a 19th-century book. The American frugal housewife suggested earwax. So Charles Brown Fleet didn't invent lip balm. But in the 1890s, he combined wax with petroleum jelly, camphor, and aromatic oils, and his chapstick is still with us today, as is Fleet's other famous health ad, the Fleet Enema. Chapstick's packaging is almost as ingenious as its ingredients. The signature tube, largely unchanged after more than 100 years, can slip into any pocket or purse. I actually have one in my pocket right now. It was so inconspicuous that E. Howard Hunt had many microphones and hollowed out chapstick tubes during Watergate. Convenient, but not addictive, as some internet rumors insist. But don't lick your lips before applying it. Saliva is made to break down food, not moisture. Depend. Incontinence products. Some people might feel uneasy having to ask a store clerk for help buy this product. Fortunately, Depend sends free sample kits to new customers. Bausch & Lomb. Contact solution. Used lenses can clog pipes and sink at the bottom of waterways. Bausch & Lomb's recycling program has safely disposed of more than 2.5 million pairs since 2016. Olay, anti-aging skin care. A year after its launch in 2018, Olay's Regenerist Whip has become the top-selling new skincare product. Number two, Regenerist Whip was SB25. And this actually was on Good Morning America, I believe either yesterday or the day before, as one of the major products they were talking about. NyQuil, cold and flu remedy. People with high blood pressure get sick too, but decongestants can be dangerous for them. NyQuil is HBP form and is specially made without decongestants. Aveeno moisturizer. In the 1940s, an oatmeal bath by American brothers Albert and Sidney Musher worked wonders on an eczema treatment. Since then, Aveeno, the Latin for not an oat, has pioneered dozens of nature-based skin products. Visine. Eye care. Originally, Visine just treats redness. Relief from itching, dryness, or other condition requires one of the more advanced formulas. Always. Feminine protection. 10 states have dropped their tax on feminine hygiene products in recent years. Neutrogena. Facial cleanser. Wash your face with plain water and your skin returns to its natural pH in 10 minutes. Add famously mild Neutrogena, and the process takes only one more minute, according to the company's research. Metamucil, fiber supplement. Fiber from the husk of the psyllium plant is Metamucil's main ingredient and has a surprising side effect. Studies show that it can lower your cholesterol. Lean cuisine, healthy frozen meals. How healthy? Even the Salisbury steak with macaroni and cheese is good for you. In fact, this website, EarthIs.com, says that in terms of its balance of calories, protein, fat, and carbs, its lean cuisine is healthiest meal. Walgreens National Pharmacy and Drugstore. Not to be rude, but 240,000 Americans would be out of work if not for Charles H. Walgreens' middle finger. That's funny. As a teenager in Dixon, Illinois in the 1890s, Walgreens worked in a shoe factory. One day, his hand got caught in a stitching machine, severing the top joint of his middle finger and ending his hoped-for career in sports. The doctor treating young Charles proposed an alternative path. Why not try pharmacy? Walgreens' first job as a pharmacist's apprentice paid $4 a week and ended with his getting fired. He forgot to shovel the snow out front. He opened his own pharmacy in 1901. Someone else could shovel, and by 1929 operated 397 stores. Today, Walgreens is the second-largest U.S. pharmacy chain after CVS and fills more than 1.1 billion prescriptions a year. Benadryl, itch relief, allergy relief. In 1933, George Rifschild sent out 200 applications in hope of becoming a commercial artist. He got nothing but rejections. So he became a chemist at the University of Cincinnati, and within 10 years he created a compound that helped reduce itchy allergic reactions. He called it Benadryl. After the oral medication became available without a prescription in the 1980s, Benadryl began to also be sold as an anti-itch cream. It won both categories. Kind. Nutrition Bar. The glucose is non-GMO, the 20-plus flavors offer abundant variety, and the grains, such as amaranth, buckwheat, and sorghum, are unrefined and packed with protein. Copper Tone. Sun protection. World War II airman Benjamin Green used veterinary petroleum to keep from getting sunburned while on duty. After the war, he added cocoa butter and coconut oil to the mix and created Copper Tone suntan lotion. The SPF came later. Robitussin, cough remedy. In Latin, the word tussin means cough. It's the same root found in the word pertussis, a.k.a. whooping cough. Disinfectant wipes, Clorox. 3 years before the iconic Hollywood sign made its debut, the big name in California was Clorox. In 1920, the American cleaning giant, then known as the Electro Alkaline Company, erected a massive billboard over San Francisco to tout its signature liquid bleach to the daily ferry commuters. Residents on the other side of the bay received a different kind of welcome. Annie Murray, the wife of the company's first general manager, insisted on handing out free samples of the newfangled cleaner to housewives visiting her family's grocery store in Oakland. You might say that Clorox still focuses on the personal touch, albeit in a somewhat different form. The Guardian estimates that the world uses about 14,000 disinfecting wet wipes every second, and according to Amazon, Clorox is the best seller. Tums. Antacid. When St. Louis pharmacist James Howe devised a mint-flavored calcium carbonate pill to quiet a patient's indigestion in the 1920s, he had an extra incentive. The patient was his wife. Cheerios, healthy cereal. Most nutritionists say that when it comes to two key factors, more fiber, less sugar, the healthy of all 18 Cheerios varieties is the original one, of course. Culturelle, probiotic. There are dozens of strains of probiotics, a.k.a. the good bacteria. LGG, the one in Culturelle, is among the few that can survive stomach acid and make its health-promoting way into the intestines. Crest, toothpaste. Little-known fact, Crest will not polish up the keys on your piano, too, whether they are made from ivory or... Crest will polish up the keys on your piano, too, whether they are made of ivory or plastic. Planters. Nuts. Your heart loves nuts as much as you do. More than 80% of the fat in peanuts is monounsaturated and polyunsaturated, both of which can lower cholesterol and keep your blood vessels supple. Weight Watchers, weight loss system. In a world that's overstuffed with fad diets, Weight Watchers is like the friend that never lets you down. Founded by New York housewife Jean Idek in 1963, it is now ranked number 1 out of 40 programs for overall weight loss and was a number 5 for healthy eating last year, according to the U.S. News & World Report. WW, its slim down name, as of 2018, became known for points program designed to help participants track how much they are eating. But the ingenuity of Weight Watchers has also been its emphasis on support, going to meetings or going online to talk about weight and nutrition and to cheer on fellow watchers. Oprah Winfrey swears by it. In fact, she is a spokeswoman and a major stock owner. Ensure. Nutritional drink. We lose up to 8% of our muscle mass each decade after age 40. Last year, Ensure produced its max protein shake with 30 grams of protein for people 45 and older. One Touch. Blood glucose monitor. In 1850, diabetes tested their blood sugar by adding a drop of urine to sheep's wool that had been doused with a chemical that turned black in the presence of sugar. One-touch meters use a drop of blood and return the precise glucose level within 5 seconds. Purina, healthy pet food. Purina has always been known for its healthy pet food. It's what the Admiral Richard E. Byrd fed his sled dogs on his 1933 Antarctic expedition. To this day, Beneful Purina's preservative-free line of food comes in flavors such as beef, potato, and green bean. Aleve, joint pain relief. Aleve was the first over-the-counter medication to provide 12-hour pain relief in a single dose. It's also available in a contoured bottle with a cushioned cap for easier gripping. Centrum, multivitamin. Have difficulty swallowing pills but feel silly chewing a gummy? In 2015, Centrum introduced a multivitamin in a mint form called Vitamints. They contain 18 vitamins and micronutrients. Trust Factors. Identified America's go-to products was only one goal of this year's Reader's Digest Trusted Brand Survey of 3,500 representative consumers, conducted by the national polling firm Ipsos. We also wanted to know what influenced buying decisions, and some of the results were surprising. For instance, price didn't generally affect trust. Only 10% of people said that an unusually low price would make them distrust a healthcare product, and only 11% say they distrusted generics. Positive online reviews spoke to many people. 45% of those looking for weight loss system said that they put significant faith in them. Overall, the biggest factor driving trust was whether a product had worked in the past. 63% of people cited that fact, followed by 54% who looked at the brand's overall reputation. On the other hand, only 6% of consumers said their trust was affected by a claim of being new or improved, with the lowest factor on our list. The stranger who changed my life. The internet chump who became a champ. An online coach goes wonderfully implausible. From target and scammer to business partners and friends, Ben Taylor left and Joe Willie. Ben Taylor is a white American, I think he's American, I'm sure, standing here. He's got a white shirt on. He's got blue eyes. And Joel Willie is an African-American gentleman wearing rather thick glasses and has a kind of a scraggly little beard. And he looks like he's shorter than Ben Taylor. One day in the winter of 2017, Ben Taylor received this random Facebook message. My name is Joel from Liberia, West Africa. I need some assistance from you. Business or financial assistant, that's a thing, will help empower me. No one likes internet scammers, Taylor included. So the 32-year-old marketer from Oregon, Utah, sincerely responded, "How can I help?" I wanted to see how this whole scam operation worked and how they bait people, Taylor explains. I just wanted to go down this rabbit hole and see what are the tricks that they use to get people. But there's no way he could have guessed what would happen next. Joe Willie was indeed in Liberia, and he proposed a business partnership. He asked Taylor to mail some used electronics to an address in New Jersey. Supposedly, the electronics would be resold, and the profits split between the two of them. I looked the place up on Google Earth, Taylor says. There were broken-down cars all over the place. He wrote back to Willie and told him he was skeptical. Willie insisted he would never take advantage of someone. The Bible says in Proverbs 22, a good name is better than silver or gold, he wrote. Taylor didn't buy it, and he replied with a small lie of his own. I figured the more time of theirs that I can waste, the less time they'll have to spend ripping me or other people off. He told Willie he owned a photography business and could use some pretty pictures. How about a nice Liberian summer, Taylor asked. Was Taylor planning on paying for the photos? Willie wanted to know. If they're good ones, sure, Taylor said. Willie wasted no time. He snapped a couple of summer photos, sunset photos, on his old dinosaur flip phone and sent them to Taylor's phone the next day. I told him, hey, this is great, Taylor said. Another fib. He wasn't even sure it was sunset on the phone. Willie said he could take better pictures if he had a better camera. Taylor decided to play along and see what happened. So he picked up the cheapest camera he could find, a shiny red one, and shipped it off to Liberia. The postage cost as much as the camera. And now Taylor was really invested in this, whatever it was. My family thinks I'm crazy because I'm interacting with this guy in Liberia, he says. Willie kept in close touch. Taylor, he wanted to be a journalist. He wrote, I've decided to really commit to devote myself to this business. What are the pictures you want me to take? Still skeptical, Taylor said he'd like to see 20 shots of life in Liberia. A week later, a bunch more blurry photos came through on his phone. Joel has to be the worst photographer on the planet, Taylor said in a YouTube video he made chronicling his adventures. By now, he had realized something interesting was happening and decided to document it. When Taylor wrote back, he shared some advice for taking better pictures. Hold the camera steady, for one thing. The next batch of Willie's photos came a few days later and contained about 20 more shots of people doing everything to everyday things, walking in town, tinkering on their houses, some of which could only generously be described as shacks. For Taylor, the images were heartbreaking, and he had never seen such poverty. But their quality was much better, which posed a bigger problem. When he put in the work, I thought, oh no, now I've got to figure out a way to compensate it, Joel, for these pictures, or I'm going to be the scammer, Taylor says. He decided to make a booklet using the pictures, calling it By D, Grace of God, that's his letter D, a phrase borrowed from Willie's messages. Then Taylor took to YouTube, where a few thousand people had started to follow his dispatches, and to the crowdfunding site Indiegogo.com, where he figured he'd sell a few copies of the 16-page booklet featuring a dozen of Willie's Liberia photos for $8 a pop. Sales exploded. People from around the world and places I'd never heard of, were buying Joel's book, Taylor said. Soon he had raised $1,000. He told Willie he could have half, and the rest, well, Taylor decided that Willie could get that too, but with a catch. Taylor told him he would have to donate $500 to charity. That is more than a year's salary in Liberia, so Taylor dearly didn't expect the unemployed improvised hustler to give just all that money away. Then another batch of pictures arrived. They showed smiling children with book bags and notebooks. Willie had bought out a market, rented a cab to haul the loot, and blessed five schools with abundance. He came through, Taylor said. It was a revelation. Taylor sighed aside his doubt and distrust, and then he did something he never could have imagined a few months earlier. He traveled 6,500 miles to Monrovia, Liberia. He wanted to confront the man who tried to scam him, although confront probably isn't the right word. Willie says scam isn't the right word either. He says he had just been looking to make a friend, but he also needed money. By the time the two men finally met in person, he had found both. We were business partners, and we were friends, says Taylor. When he got to Monrovia, Taylor felt surprisingly at home. I saw places that the faces of the pictures Joel had sent, he says. When he got to Willie Street, he recognized it right away. He found his friend sitting outside his house, which was little more than cinder block walls, a dirt floor, and a tin roof. Inside were Willie's wife and some of his seven children, who also greeted Taylor like an old friend. Willie confessed to Taylor that he used to send Facebook messages to strangers, hoping to find some way a new friend would help him out of poverty. He said he was more than desperate. To feed the kids, a lot of things run in your mind, Willie said. Go and do this, the wrong thing. Fortunately, by the grace of God, it never came to that. The booklets kept selling, 8,000 at press time. People started taking pictures of themselves holding their copies and posting them on social media with the tag, Book of Joel. Soon Willie had new friends in more than 10 countries. I'm sorry, more than 40 countries. And Taylor's fundraising campaign had raised $12,000. Some of the profits went towards Willie's basic needs, such as a new roof to keep the rain out of his home. But the two men decided most of the money should be reinvested in the community. Half the people in Liberia survive on less than $2 a day. Over the past 20 years, the country has seen two civil wars and an Ebola outbreak that cured nearly 5,000 people in a nation of more than 4 million. Because need is everywhere, Taylor and Willie decided to start with the most vulnerable and supplied five more schools with book bags, notebooks, and other necessities. Taylor decided to tell their story in a second booklet, By the Grace of God, a True Story. Sales of both booklets total some $90,000 so far, and over the past year or so, with Taylor in Utah keeping track of the money and wiring it as needed, and Willie the man in the street on the street in Monrovia, they have done a lot more good. They paid the utility bills at one school and the teacher salaries at another that was about to close because its funding had dried up. For Christmas, Willie handed out care packages of used clothing to 500 kids, what he said they wanted most, and 25 bags of rice to needy families. They had begun mentoring entrepreneurs and making microloans of $50 to $100, a life-changing sum in Monrovia. Of course, the locals aren't the only ones who have been changed by this unlikely partnership. Taylor says he's no longer the cynic who started all this. That's just not me, he says. I've changed. I set out to embarrass a guy. I ended up helping a guy. I would much rather continue to help people. You feel good when you help others. As for Willie, he says he's changed too. Although he still has to support his wife and kids on what many Americans spend at Starbucks, he says he's okay using much of the money to help others. In fact, he says the opportunity to be charitable may be the best thing to come from all this. I used to receive, Willie says. I'm the one who's giving now, and it's better to give than to always receive. Do you ever consider keeping the $500? No, he said. It's stealing, and that would be dishonest. When you're truthful, when you're honest, you can come from nobody to somebody. I have come to zero to hero. Taylor has already been back to Liberia, and he says plans to keep going are to help. Because, as he says, when you give someone a chance, sometimes they're not who you thought they were. Sometimes they surprise you, and sometimes you end up being the answer to their prayers. My friend, the timber wolf. Deep in the Alaskan wilderness, a prospector comes to the rescue of an injured mother wolf and her pups, and a lasting connection is formed. And there's a black and white picture here of a female timber wolf can weigh as much as 100 pounds. Beautiful looking animal. One spring morning many years ago, I had been prospecting for gold along Coho Creek in southeastern Alaska's Kuppernoff Island, and as I emerged from a forest of spruce and hemlock, I froze in my tracks. No more than 20 paces away in the bog was a huge Alaskan timber wolf, caught in one of Trapper George's traps. Old George had died the previous week of a heart attack, so the wolf was lucky I had happened along. Confused and frightened at my approach, the wolf backed away, straining at the trap chain. Then I noticed something else. It was a female, and her teats were full of milk. Somewhere there was a den of hungry pups waiting for their mother. From her appearance, I guessed that she had been trapped only a few days. That meant the pups were probably still alive, surely no more than a few miles away. But I suspected if I tried to release the wolf, she would turn aggressive and try to tear me to pieces. So I decided to search for her pups instead, and began to look for incoming tracks that might lead me to her den. Fortunately, there were still few remaining patches of snow. After several moments, I spotted paw marks on a trail skirting the bog. The tracks led half a mile through the forest, then up a rock-strewn slope. I finally spotted the den at the base of an enormous spruce. There wasn't a sound inside. Wolf pups are very shy and cautious, and I didn't have much hope of luring them outside, but I had to try. So I began to imitate the high-pitched squeal of a mother wolf calling her young. No response. A few moments later, after I tried another call, four tiny pups appeared. They couldn't have been more than a few weeks old. I extended my hands, and they tentatively suckled at my fingers. Perhaps hunger had helped overcome their natural fear. Then one by one, I placed them in a burlap bag and headed back down the slope. When the mother wolf spotted me, she stood erect, possibly picking up the scent of her young, and she let out a high-pitched plaintive whine. I released the pups, and they raced to her. Within seconds, they were slurping at her belly. What next? I wondered. The muffler wolf was clearly suffering, and each time I moved in her direction, a menacing growl rumbled in her throat. With her young to protect, she was becoming belligerent. She needs nourishment, I thought. I have to find her something to eat. I hiked toward Coho Creek and spotted the leg of a dead deer sticking out of a snowbank. I cut off a hind quarter, then returned the remains to nature's icebox. Toting the venison haunch back to the wolf, I whispered in a soothing tone, "Okay, mother, your dinner is served, but only if you start growling at me. Come on now, easy." I tossed chunks of venison in her direction. She sniffed them, then gobbled them up. Cutting hemlock boughs, I fashioned a rough shelter for myself and was soon asleep nearby. At dawn, I was awakened by four fluffy bundles of fur sniffing my face and hands. I glanced toward the agitated mother wolf. If I could only win her confidence, I thought it was her only hope. Over the next few days, I divided my times between prospecting and trying to win the wolf's trust. I talked gently with her, threw her more venison, and played with the pups. Little by little, I kept edging closer, though I was careful to remain beyond the length of her chain. The big animal never took her dark eyes off me. "Come on, mother," I pleaded. "You want to go back to your friends on the mountain. Relax." And there's a picture here of a cute little wolf pup. At dusk on the fifth day, I delivered her daily fare of venison. "Here's dinner," I said softly as I approached. "Come on, girl. Nothing to be afraid of." Suddenly the pups came bounding to me. At least I had their trust. But as I was beginning to lose hope of ever winning over the mother, then I thought I saw a slight wagging of her tail. I moved within the length of her chain. She remained motionless. My heart in my mouth, I sat down 8 feet from her. One snap of her huge jaws and she could break my arm or my neck. I wrapped my blanket around myself and slowly settled into the cold ground. It was a long time before I fell asleep. I woke at dawn, stirred by the sound of the pups nursing. Gently, I leaned over, and petted them. The mother wolf stiffened. "Good morning, friends," I said tentatively. Then I slowly placed my hand on the wolf's injured leg. She flinched but made no threatening move. This can't be happening, I thought. Yet it was. I could see the trapped steel jaws had imprisoned only two toes. They were swollen and lacerated, but she wouldn't lose the paw, if I could free her. "Okay," I said, "just a little longer and we'll have you out of there." I applied pressure and the trap swung open, the wolf pulled free. Whimpering, she loped about, favoring the injured paw. My experience in the wild suggested that the wolf would now gather her pups and vanish into the woods. But cautiously, she crept toward me. The pups nipped playfully at her mother as she stopped at my elbow. Slowly, she sniffed my hands and arms. Then the wolf began licking my fingers. I was astonished. This went against everything I'd ever heard about timber wolves. Yet strangely, it all seemed so natural. After a while, with her pup scurrying around her, the mother wolf was ready to leave and began to limp off towards the forest. Then she turned back to me. "You want me to come with you, girl?" I asked. Curious, I packed my gear and set off. Following Coho Creek for a few miles, we ascended Cupinal Mountain until we reached an alpine meadow. There, lurking in the forest perimeter, was a wolf pack. I counted 9 adults, and judging by their playful antics, 4 nearly full-grown pups. After a few minutes of greeting, the pack broke into howling. It was an eerie sound, ranging from low wails to high-pitched yodeling. At dark, I set up camp by the light of my fire and a glistening moon. I could see furtive wolf shapes dodging in and out of the shadow, eyes shining. I had no fear. They were merely curious. So was I. I woke at first light. It was time to leave the wolf to her pack. She watched as I assembled my gear and started walking across the meadow. Reaching the far side, I looked back. The mother and pups were sitting where I had just left them, watching me. I don't know why, but I waved. At the same time, the mother wolf sent a long, mournful howl into the crisp air. 4 years later, after serving in World War II, I returned to Coho Creek in the fall of 1945. After the horrors of the war, it was good to be back among the soaring spruce and breathing the familiar, bracing air of the Alaskan bush. There, I saw, hanging in a red cedar where I had placed it 4 years before, the now rusted steel trap that had ensnared the mother wolf. The sight of it gave me a strange feeling, and something made me climb Cupinal Mountain to the meadow where I had last seen her. There, standing on a lofty ledge, I gave out a long, low wolf call, something I had done many times before. An echo came back across the distance. Again I called, and again the echo reverberated, this time followed by a wolf call from a ridge half a mile away. Then far off, I saw a dark shape moving slowly in my direction. As it crossed the meadow, I could see it was a timber wolf. A chill spread through my whole body. I knew at once that familiar shape, even after 4 years. "Hello, old girl," I called gently. The wolf edged closer, ears erect, body tense, and stopped a few yards off, her bushy tail wagging slightly. Moments later, the wolf was gone. I left Kufrinoff Island a short time after that, and never saw the animal again. But the memory she left me with me, vivid, haunting, a little eerie, will always be there, reminded that there are things in nature that exist outside the laws and understanding of man. During that brief instant in time, the injured animal and I had somehow penetrated each other's worlds, bridging barriers that were never meant to be bridged. There's no explaining experience like this, but can only accept them and cause their tinged with an air of mystery and strangeness, perhaps measure them all the more. This story originally paid in the May of 1987 of Reader's Digest. What's an award worth? Biologist Jane Watson put his Nobel Prize up for auction because of financial difficulties. It was bought for $4.7 million, then promptly returned to him. A bird enthusiast paid more than $11,000 for a Medal of Bravery awarded to Paddy the Pigeon, the fastest carrier bird to return to England with news of the D-Day landing. Flight time about 5 hours. Steven Spielberg set more than $1.3 million buying vintage Oscars at auction, including Betty Davis' statue for Jezebel, that he then donates back to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Archive. And let's pop back over to Consumer Reports. I'm going to repeat something that I read last week about fighting unfair ticket fees, because I actually didn't get to finish that. We ran out of time. Service fees, facility fees, convenience fees. If you purchased tickets to a concert or performance recently, you've probably been hit by one or more of them. Frustratingly, they're often, while a ticking clock pressures you to complete the transaction before you lose your tickets. The fees aren't trivial. The Government Accountability Office estimates that the average fee on initial ticket sales is 27% of face value and 31% of resale sites. The problem is exacerbated by the highly concentrated marketplace, with Live Nation Entertainment, which owes Ticketmaster, that dominating ticket sales and promotion. The competitive pressure is to improve the consumer experience just can't. House CR has your back. The Federal Trade Commission has taken notice. It recently asked for comments in advance of a March workshop on online ticketing. We asked CR members to share their stories, and within days, more than 6,000 wrote 100 with examples of hidden fees in ticket sales, as well as bait-and-switch tactics and bogus ticket sites to secondary market. We shared the responses with the FTC and included recommendations in our form of comments. Among them, if a consumer has to pay a fee to get a product or service, that fee should be included in the base advertised rate. Additional fees should be disclosed early enough that a consumer can use that information in their buying decision, and the fee amount should reflect the cost of additional product or service. That is, companies shouldn't be able to match price hikes by adding additional fees. Easing student debt. What's at stake? Students who were defrauded by for-profit colleges recently scored an important victory. The fight dates back to 2016, when the federal government made it easier for students to get educational debts canceled if their schools were that shut down. The policy known as the Borrow Defense Rules was prompted by the implosion of Corinthian Colleges and ITT Tech, which folded after being accused of misleading prospective students with inflated job placement claims and graduating rates. Many students were left with big debts, but without the training they'd been promised. For-profit schools pushed to block the rules, and they were put on hold in 2017 when Betsy DeVos became the new head of the Department of Education. Instead, DeVos proposed new rules that CR and other consumer groups said would make it almost impossible for swindled students to get relief. In October, a federal judge reinstated the old rules, and in December, the Education Department announced it would cancel the debts of students negatively impacted by some of the recent for-profit school closures. House CR has your back. CR pushed for the Borrow Defense Rules and joined the legal effort to prevent the delay. Now we'll make sure the rules are implemented fairly. Letters. On January 2019 cover story, Medical Test, Do and Don't Need, discuss the screening test that can save your life and which can be a waste of time and money. Kudos for your report on medical test. When I protested to a screening service about their solicitations, the company tried to scare me with the dangers of not using their tests. Recently, I've received the company's solicitation and mailings from a legitimate organization I belong to. Smells like the screening service is offering a financial reward of such organizations include their literature and their regular mailings. Just what we need, another business milking our already overpriced health budgets. As a retired MD, 30 years in emergency medicine, I agreed with most of your article about too many tests. However, you forgot to point out one of the big reasons for overtesting, hospital, clinic, and provider scorecards. Medicare providers are still being ranked by patient satisfaction, which is often driven by whether patients get all the tests they want, even after you explain why they aren't necessary. Doing an X-ray on every sprained ankle is a classic example in emergency medicine. And that's from Emma K. Ledbetter, retired from Gunderson Health Services, La Cruz, Wisconsin. We applaud CR for its cover story on overuse in medical testing and for using its voice to foster ongoing dialogue about unnecessary tests, treatments, and procedures. From the start, our foundation has believed that it will take many stakeholders to minimize the risk of patient harm from overuse presents. That's David Wolfson, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation. The article is fair enough, but absent is discussing malpractice lawsuits and doctors' practice in defensive medicine. No doubt some unnecessary or questionable diagnostic testing is done for other reasons, But the multi-billion-dollar malpractice industry is certainly one of the big reasons. In the article, you quote the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations that PSA, prostate-specific antigen, testing be stopped at age 70. I was one of the men whose life would have been shortened by this recommendation. If I had not had that PSA test, I would probably not be alive today. I am 78 years old. I spent last week at Disney World with my 4-year-old granddaughter. Being there with her, seeing the wonder in the eye in her eyes, was a delightful experience for one. I would have been in denial of that experience if my doctor had followed the USPSTF recommendation. As a longtime reader of Consumer Reports for 70-plus years, I was quite upset by your PSA testing discussion. You told the story of one patient with developmental septicemia after a prostate biopsy with hospitalization and organ damage. Frankly, this is the most serious complication I have ever heard of, and I believe it to be very unusual. I practiced urology for more than 52 years and with doing many prostate biopsies, found complications to be rare, usually some minor bleeding or a minor infection requiring a course of appropriate antibiotics. My four partners had the same experience. Prostate cancer is one of the leading causes of cancer death in men. We should not stop getting PSAs in healthy older men. Editor's note, we received a number of letters concerning the prostate-specific antigen, PSA blood test. As we mentioned in our article, PSA testing does have some benefits, especially because prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer deaths in American men, after lung cancer. Still, the test has important limitations. For one, research shows that for every 1,000 men aged 55 to 69 who have to test every 1 to 4 years, 0 to 1 death will be prevented, according to data from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. And the effectiveness in men 70 and older is even lower because prostate cancer tends to progress very slowly, making the test a lot less useful for older you get. Also, men with a high PSA level often undergo a follow-up biopsy, which can cause bleeding, urinary problems, and infections, including serious ones such as the one we described in our article. For these and other reasons, the USPSTF recommends that men stop this screening at age 70. Still, a study published last year in the Journal of Cancer suggested that prostate death rates, which have indeed been declining for about 2 decades, have begun leveling off, but not rising, after a drop in PSA usage. So men in their 50s and 60s should talk with their doctor about the risk of benefits of having PSA screening. Saving money on meds. Your good article, How to Pay Less for Your Meds, on Medicare Part D, did not mention that if you currently have low drug costs and have an income large enough to require additional Part D monthly payments, foregoing Part D enrollment may be your interest financially. Editor's note, this might not need an expensive drug when you're first signed up for Medicare, but you'd need it later on. As we mentioned in our article, skipping Part D now can end up costing you if you decide to enroll later, because you'll pay an extra 1% on your monthly premium for every month that goes by when you didn't have the insurance. I asked my doctor for a prescription for a full year of my blood pressure medication, which has been on for years. My pharmacy filled the yearly prescription for only twice the price of what I would pay for a 3-month supply, 4 times the pill for only twice the price. Good luck trying to with insurance that typically allows only a 90-day supply. We're glad you found an insurance plan and a supplier that help you save money. To see how pharmacies rate on price, accuracy, helpfulness, and more, turn to our Get More from Your Drugstore. New car buying. I am an internet manager for a new car franchise. And does car buying make your head spin? You missed a know when to walk away, so I will share it with you. When a customer is shopping websites and they see the exact same options on one vehicle and it's $3,000 less than the same vehicle at another dealership, oftentimes if you look at the rebate section, that is where we will find the difference. Some dealerships, in an effort to one-up the other guys, list rebates that exist but are unstackable from the manufacturer's standpoint. There is no plausible way the consumer could get all those rebates. Also, the document fee can often vary ridiculously. Finally, I would like to say that good car salesmen understand the frustration customers have and work to make a fair deal for everyone. Most of us are transparent. Editor's note. Rather than trying to decipher which rebates or deals apply to you, you can avoid any confusion by getting direct quote from the dealer. He or she should ask you all the right questions to determine your eligibility for rebates, then factor them in properly before sending you a price to consider. Food for thought. Your recent article, Must Love Pasta, featured a very helpful mention of low-sodium sauces. I have found some really good products at Costco, canned green beans, canned diced tomatoes, and canned black beans, with fairly low sodium and at very reasonable prices. Eating out is a particular challenge. I finally dared to ask for unsalted chips at my favorite Mexican restaurant. And one time I went ahead and complained to the manager when a cook was oversalting the recipes. Even though this chain restaurant works from company recipes, the amount of salt added is often left up to the chef. I can't believe that you included Hunt's Traditional, but didn't include the far superior Del Monte. I nearly always buy Del Monte canned spaghetti sauce because it's cheap and also great as pizza sauce. Editor's note, because we can't test every single product on the market, we tested a selection of top-selling pasta sauces, but we're glad Del Monte sauce works for you. Fitness fun. Thanks for reviewing treadmills. Exercising at home allows me to match my session to my needs and available time. No workout clothes, driving, or gym membership to pay for. It's a great way to incorporate exercise in daily life. What we're testing in our labs. And top-loading washing machines. They tested 58 models, and they tested for washing performance, including how well a model's normal cycle cleans a load of mixed cotton items. A washing wonder by LG at $720 was the high score. The giant agitator by Maytag was $70. The net was $1,230. Slim for a tight spaces with the LG WT901, that was $540, and that got a good score too. Gas dryer, they tested 74 models. Drying performance with a mix of fabrics and load sizes, ease of use including controls, noise, and more. The top tumbler was the LG DRGX, $1,050. The hot deal was the LG DLG71 for $730, and built for large loads, the Maytag MGD B95 for $1,260. Why have washers become so enormous in recent years? The single answer is consumer demand. In fact, our lab just finished testing the largest top-loading agitator in the industry, a 44 by 29 by 30 inch, the giant Maytag shown above. A larger washer drum lets you fit more laundry per wash, and that's a time saver, particularly because some machines can take up to 2 hours per load, says Richard Handel, the overseas CR's washer testing. Also, most top-loader models have a deep fill option that add waters when you want it. But bear in mind that deep drums can make collecting clothes from the bottom of the drum challenging, particularly if you're a short person. One shopping tip if you're buying big, measure the doorways through which the machine must fit on delivery, not just the space it lives in. I can imagine some short person falling into their tub and not being able to get out. Slow cookers. We tested 8 models. They test for tenderness of meat and vegetables after 5 hours on high and 8 hours on low, clarity of controls, ease of programming, and more. Now you're cooking. Crotback Cook and Carry scored 84, and that's $100. The non-stick and stovetop safe, the Cephalon Digital Sauté at $100, that scored 78. And bargain buy, the Black & Decker Digital Programmer, I think that's what I have, scored a 72 for an overall score, and that's only $50. Frozen veggies, we tested 31 products. Test for nutrition, including calories per gram of food, fats, sodium, sugars, iron, and more, and flavor and texture and attributes measured by trained taste testers. Very healthy choice. Green Giant riced veggies, cauliflower, risotto medley, $3.50 for a 12-ounce bag. Great flavor. Bird's Eye veggies made mashed cauliflower, original $4 for a 12-ounce bag. And nice price per bite. Trader Joe's riced cauliflower, stir-fry, $2 for a $16 bag. Streaming media devices. They tested 8 models. Picture quality for streaming video given the some network connection and speed. Features include the number of streaming services and more. Super smart and versatile. Amazon Fire Cable TV Cube, $20. $120. Excellent casting for less. George Google Chromecast for $70, and budget-friendly streamer Roku Premiere for $40. Car batteries. We tested 14 Group 24 and 24F models. Test for battery's life, how a battery endures repeated charge and discharge cycles, how long it can run a car if the charging system fails, and more. Best overall performance was the Napa Legend Premium for $130. Good deal for cold climates was the EverStart 24F. That was $90. Easy to check battery level, the Interstate Meg of Trust, and that was $120. I know omega-3s are good for me. Is it worth buying eggs that contain them? And this is for the expert. Egg producers that tout omega-3 in their packaging typically feed their hens food such as flaxseed, which gives their egg a boost of the omega-3 fats, a la alpha-linolenic acid, and the DHA eicosanoic acid. The idea is that consumers who eat those eggs will get omega-3 benefits from the form of heart, eye, and brain health. But fatty fish, such as salmon or sardines, is a much better source of omega-3s. Not only does fish have more of the nutrients overall, says Charlotte Vallée, senior policy analyst for food and nutrition at CR, but the mix of omega-3 types, fat types in fish is superior to eggs, so the fish contain very little ALA. It does contain DHA and another omega-3, EPA. And of the three types, DHA and EPA have known health benefits. So, for example, Eggland's Best Eggs have 125 milligrams of omega-3s, about evenly split between ALA and DHA. By contrast, 3.5 ounces of cooked salmon has about 560 milligrams of DHA and 300 milligrams of EPAs. As for ALA, other foods have more than an egg, too. Walnuts have 2,570 milligrams per ounce. Chia seeds, 2,169 milligrams per tablespoon. Flax seeds, 2,350 milligrams per tablespoon. And canola oil, 1,280 milligrams per tablespoon. If you eat any of these foods regularly and fish sauce twice a week, there's no reason to spend more money on omega-3 eggs, Vallée says, although there's no harm in adding them to your diet. Considering omega-3 supplements instead, along with other benefits, there's some evidence that fish oil pills may help people who already have heart disease, but they won't work to prevent it. So talk to a doctor before taking them. Any last-minute tax neeps I should know about? In spite of major tax law changes this year, you can still lower taxable income for 2018 by establishing or adding to various tax-deferred savings accounts, as long as you do it before the tax deadline, midnight on April 15, 2019, in most states, says CR senior money editor Tobel Stranger. For example, you can probably still contribute to a traditional IRA, whether existing or new. The maximum deductible contribution is $5,500 for those under age 50 and $6,500 for those 50 and older. Your deductions may be limited depending on the income and whether you and your spouse have a work retirement plan, Stanger says. Self-employed people are eligible for higher income and deductible contribution limits with a simplified employee pension, SEP IRA. On IRS.gov, consult IRS publication S90-A, Contributions to Individual Retirement Arrangements. If you have a health savings account, HSA, and your health coverage for 2018 was a high-deductible health plan, you can still add money there, too. HSA contribution levels for 2018 are $3,450 for individuals and $6,900 for families, and $1,000 more for those 55 and older. I rent my home on Airbnb using a traditional lock and key. Is a smart lock safer? Yes, safer and easier. These electronic devices not only eliminate the hassle of meeting renters in person, but also eliminate the need for physical keys, which guests could copy at a hardware store, making the property vulnerable later on. Usually costing between $150 and $300, some smart lock models replace your existing deadbolt, while others convert the existing bolt into a smart lock. With an internet-connected smart lock, you can create temporary access codes, allowing visitors to type a numerical code into a number pad on the lock to gain entry, or use electronic keys. In the latter case, the key lives in electronic form in a smartphone app and talks to the lock wirelessly. We've tested a few smart locks and don't even have physical keyholes, says Dave Trezza, CR's door lock test engineer. That makes them resistant to being picked and much harder to drill through. Smart locks also let you monitor when guests come and go, as well as revoke their access at checkout time, all without ever setting foot on the property. Some smart locks can also integrate directly with Airbnb, HomeAway, and VRBC. Repair or replace water-damaged appliances. Flood water can quickly ruin your appliances depending on which parts were submerged and for how long. Even if they dry out, it's likely that parts were damaged and may no longer be safe or reliable, says Jim Noni, the engineer who oversees CR assessing of large appliances. As a result, it probably makes more sense to replace the entire appliance, given the high cost of repair parts and labor. But there are exceptions. For example, you might be able to salvage your fridge if the flood water rose only a few inches. The refrigerator's compressor and condenser fan are typically located in the bottom of the unit, which does put them at risk. But because those parts and their electric connections are slightly elevated off the floor, there's a chance the water didn't reach them, says Joe Pasala, a CR engineer. If that's the case, your fridge's insulation is probably dry too. If it's still running when you get home, that's a good sign, though it may still need a tune-up or a cleaning. The same goes to a stand-up freezer. Chest freezers may not be so lucky. The insulation in these is close to the floor, so it's likely to get waterlogged and grow mold. Well, we only got about a minute and a half left, so let's do some laugh lines. If Leonardo da Vinci were alive today, the Mona Lisa would have been called IMG-2012-12483. If I'm ever feeling down, I just type, "You are the best," into Google. Then it responds, "I think you mean you are the best," and feel much better. Before you buy that nice jacket online, ask yourself, "Am I willing to delete one extra email every day for the rest of my life?" My computer just gave me an error 404 message, which can't be right because I know I've made way more errors than that. That's the great blue screen of death. Moses was technically the first person to download files to his tablet from the cloud. That's good. My Roomba just sent into the corner and knocked over the brooms that was leaning there. Dude, chill out. You already got the job. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's broadcast of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, thetrianglereadingservice.org. If you would like to thank all of our past sponsors for their generous contributions to the Reading Service. If you have any comments or questions or would like to be a sponsor, please call us at 919-832-5138. I am Jim Cronin, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.